Welcome back, gang. And in studio with me, I've got famed journalist, LGBT journalist, Karen Oakham. Welcome back to the show once again, Karen.
Thank you.
And on the phone, we have calling in live Steve Afriat. Steve, are you with us?
Yes, I am. And good morning and hello, Karen.
Hello.
So, Steve, I mean, I think a lot of people around Southern California know you as Steve Afriat, the lobbyist or the consultant. But what they don't know is Steve Afriat, the early LGBT activist way back when. When did you first, come out and start to get involved with things related to LGBT people?
Well, I began to come out, John, back in the late 70s. I was a high school teacher when the Briggs Initiative was on the ballot.
Oh, wow, that's 78, and that would have banned homosexuals from teaching in the public schools.
That's correct, yeah. We had a lot of enemies that people don't remember, and John Briggs is a name that people should not forget. And he was the Donald Trump of Orange County of the 70s.
Yeah, yep.
But I have to admit, I came out sort of in baby steps, because it was a scary time, and I was worried about my job, and I was also worried about how people would react. It was not a time when a lot of people were coming out.
Yep. Yeah, and that would have been the 70s, and then I didn't know you were a school teacher in the 70s. Obviously, you had something at stake. You could have been thrown out of the classroom for being gay.
I could have been, and so could have a lot of my friends and other people who were also very afraid.
One of the things that Zev Jaroslawski used to talk about is how standing up as an ally was also equally as dangerous, if you will, because what a lot of people don't remember or know is that the Briggs Initiative was not only attacking teachers, LGBT teachers, but anybody who supported them, including just by a public statement.
It's really a good point, and I give Zev a lot of credit. It was his first term as a council member. He was very courageous, and there were two people who were debating John Briggs up and down the state. One was Harvey Milk, and the other was Zev Jaroslawski.
That's amazing. And he was a straight ally from the Fairfax District here in Los Angeles, right?
Yes, and upon his election to the city council, he reintroduced a motion that others had tried to get passed adopt the first anti-discrimination laws in a city, even before San Francisco, to protecting members of the LGBT community. And after Zev's election, it passed on an 8-7 vote.
I didn't realize it was a split vote. That's amazing on the LA City Council. Zev, I think Zev and Tom Bradley were the very first politicians, Mayor Tom Bradley, that got involved with MECLA, because MECLA was in its formative years about this same time, the first LGBT political action committee in the country.
That's correct, and they were very active raising money. I think their birth was in the late 70s, so I don't think they came of age until the 80s.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And what a lot of people may not, who are young now, and may not know who Tom Brady was, but Tom Brady was...
Bradley.
Sorry.
Tom Brady's a quarterback. That, yeah. I know.
I know who he is, too.
He's a hot quarterback, but you're talking about the mayor of L.A.
Friend of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Tom Bradley was African-American and the first black mayor of Los Angeles, and Zev Jaroslawski was and is still, I believe, an Orthodox Jewish person. So the stereotypes about African Americans and Orthodox Jews not supporting LGBT people, you know, just got a pushback on that one and early on. And meanwhile, I think the AIDS epidemic was about to crash on us too.
Yes, yes. And Zev, by the way, was not Orthodox. He considers himself conservative, but okay. He was elected in an upset victory in part because he had strong support among the Orthodox community.
Mm. Thank you for the clarification.
Steve, did you work for Zev or Ed Edelman or both?
No, I was Zev's chief of staff from 1983 to 1985.
Wow.
Which was really the onset. I mean, I showed up at City Hall and all of a sudden we have an AIDS crisis among us, and it impacted Zev's district significantly. The lines were different then, and we had the Gay and Lesbian Center and the first AIDS Project Los Angeles on Cole Avenue, John, you may remember, and Karen, was also in Zev's district.
Mm. And Afriat Blackstone, you're credited with starting the first AIDS Walk. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, it wasn't my firm, and I really want to say this emphatically because so much credit goes to him. The real founder of the AIDS Walk was Craig Miller, who currently operates the AIDS Walk today and has done a magnificent job. Craig and I were long-term friends since we were kids, and I was getting ready to depart Zev's office, and he came to me and said, would I partner with him, and at the time his partner, and help produce the walk. It was already in production. It was in late July of, I'm staring at the first flyer that hangs at my office. It was July 28th, 1985.
Wow.
And so I played a role in securing Paramount Studios and helping with some permit issues and, of course, doing a lot of strategy. And I was really proud to be included as a founder of that walk under Craig's leadership. But for me, it was a one-year experience, and I was starting my own business, and it's a very, very consuming project.
34 years ago, too.
And that was also just after Rock Hudson died, right?
Yes. The walk was already being promoted when Rock Hudson died, and I remember a lot of banners praying for Rock Hudson and acknowledging Rock Hudson. I will also say we were talking about Tom Bradley. He was the honorary chair of the First AIDS Walk, and his name is on the flyer, and I had the amazing privilege of being able to introduce him to kick off the walk.
Got Steve, you got time to do a second segment? We're going to have to break for top of the hour. So we'll be hearing more from Steve Afriat when we come back from top of the hour, and Karen Oakham here in studio. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. Welcome back, gang, in studio with me. I've got Karen Oakham doing this last hour of the show around politics, and we have our guest, Steve Afriat, still on the line. Steve, you still there?
Yes, I am, John.
All right, great. Let's set a setting for our listeners, because there's a 1970s, late 70s, early 80s Los Angeles, like I think most cities around the country. There were some people working on the Equal Rights Amendment, and there were some anti-discrimination statutes being propped up here or there, but the sexual revolution was still in play. I mean, there was bathhouses and gay bars and disco. All of that was really at its height before HIV and AIDS hit. I assume you remember all this. Yeah, Steve, I'm not. Am I making you salivate? Because I'm salivating in studio.
Well, I'm certainly feeling nostalgic.
And ironically, actually, the going away party of Studio One is tomorrow night. We've had them on the show a few times now. The big final going away to Studio One. In essence, we're saying goodbye to a very nostalgic period of our history when we were just trying to figure out where in the world we all fit.
Yes, yes. And if I could add a quick thing to that, John and Karen, as a high school teacher and with the Briggs Initiative and Harvey Milk's campaign, which for those who don't remember is, if you want to beat Briggs, come out. Mm-hmm. Let your neighbors, let your shopkeepers know that you're gay and they liked you before, they should like you now. And that permeated into high schools. And I saw, as a teacher, gay kids coming out at 16, 17, 18 years old. And what a remarkable thing it was.
Well, and in fact, I came out at 19.
Yeah.
So I wasn't that far.
I don't remember you in my class.
No, it was 1978, and I was 19, and that's when I came out. But, you know, it wasn't so much about Harvey Milk. It was at least for me, it was about that hunger to figure out where in the world I fit. Where do I fit? And my coming out happened with my fake ID at Studio One. That was my entree.
It wasn't a Disneyland? I mean, give me a break.
I was at Disneyland, but I was dating girls back then. See, Jason, I dated girls once. Nobody can imagine today.
Well, for me, coming out was also coming out to myself, mm-hmm. and beginning that process of acceptance. And then it was, you know, walking into my first gay bar, which was so scary, and then I felt at home.
Yeah. So here you are. You're now chief of staff to this very powerful politician, L.A. City, or maybe a fledgling powerful politician, Xavier Aslavsky. And all of a sudden, you're getting word in the district that gay men are dying of things like Kaposi's sarcoma and pneumocystis and toxoplasmosis and CMV retinitis, and probably words that none of us should know. What, if anything, are you and Zev talking about?
Well, we're talking on two different levels. One is, how do we get higher levels to engage? The county has a health department, but there were not three friendly votes on the Board of Supervisors back then.
That's right.
State government, you know, we had Jerry Brown in the legislature, but it wasn't like today. You were lucky if there were 10 Democrats in the legislature that were prepared to respond to that. John Burton, Willie Brown, Henry Waxman, and a handful of others. Well, Henry had gone on to Congress, but Howard Berman was there. And so there were not a lot of go-to people. Zev gave me a lot of latitude to bridge to the LGBT community, and so we assembled some meetings that included the early AIDS Project Los Angeles, and of course we had Steve Schulte at the time, who was head of the, at the time it was called the Gay and Lesbian Center on Highland Avenue, and started to have meetings back then about what we can do to engage people. Zev was chair of the Budget and Finance Committee, and we were actually got the first initial funding for AIDS Project Los Angeles. And it wasn't a lot of money, just to do outreach, help them pay their rent, and begin to figure out a way to start educating people. Because back in 1983, I don't think any of us were fully educated.
Yeah. And what were you thinking about your own mortality or exposure?
I was scared. I felt like... I felt like there was a clock ticking. I was one of the fortunate ones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there but for the grace of God. It could have been me, just like it could have been anybody else. And as I participated in helping people become educated, I became educated myself.
Yeah. Steve, flash forward to 2019. There's a guy named Mayor Pete running for president of the United States and doing well in Iowa. It's not second, maybe third. Did you ever think in our lifetime that we would reach this moment?
No. No. I'm still getting used to marriage, even though I'm married myself. I have to say what an amazing skyrocket it has been in terms of our civil rights movement. And I think we learned a lot from the African American community, from the Latino community, on how to do that. And I think that HIV, if I could ever put a positive spin on it, which I can't even imagine I said those words, is it taught us the importance of uniting and fighting.
And organizing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I tell the millennials, we didn't have the luxury of dissent. You know, now there's so much infighting over who's got the lowest rung of the ladder. Or by dissent, I mean, not that we couldn't disagree on policy, but we had everybody come to a common table, whether it was ACT UP or the Log Cabin Guys or Southern California, Women for Understanding. I think in general, beyond just the Life AIDS lobby, I think we had a crisis on our hands. It was death and dying.
We did.
Doesn't get any more critical.
And it was personal to us. They were our friends.
I think that, you know, I don't like to look for silver linings in the midst of AIDS, but it forced us into the fast lane very quickly.
Yes, it did. And I always like to say, because it's so important, when so many of our friends and loved ones were dying, but for the lesbian community.
Yes. Yep.
Who were cooking meals and tending to people
and leading organizations.
Yes. Yeah. And fighting for us when we couldn't fight for ourselves. Our sisters really helped save a lot of lives.
Yeah. I pay that tribute wherever I can and whenever I can. Steve, we have less than a minute. I guess if there's a young LGBT activist listening in a small town somewhere in America, what would you say?
I would say reach out to us, find allies and supporters. It only takes that one person. Maybe it's a teacher, because that was my experience. And it's not always easy to leave a small town, and especially to come to L.A. We see too many sad instances of people on the streets. But find us. Find John Duran at West Hollywood City Hall and let us help you. Let us connect you with services. There are services in Los Angeles and other big cities that will reach out to whatever town you're living in to help you get through it.
Awesome. Steve, thanks for coming on the show. Hope to have you back another day. You're a fountain of information.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you.
When we come back, gang, Karen Oakham and I will be doing election year wrap-up on election 2019. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q.